welcome to the Hearts Entwined podcast. In this podcast, we'll be having discussions around the secrets which attract lasting, healthy, fulfilling relationships, creating a healthy mindset, and what women should know and understand about men. Introducing your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts, relationship expert, trainer, speaker, and best-selling author of The Cupid's Bow Technique. Lynn's mission is to have a positive impact in reducing divorce, domestic violence, and suicide.
Welcome to the Hearts in Time podcast. This is your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts. And today, listeners, we've got a very interesting topic. It is all about what is narcissistic abuse. Yes. And my expert today is Stephanie Ann. She's a speaker, author, and attorney. So welcome, Stephanie.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you so much for coming. And tell the audience initially, Stephanie, what is your, I suppose, background and expertise around this topic of narcissistic abuse?
Yeah, so I was actually married to two narcissists. My first husband was a covert narcissist. I was married to him for 14 years, and then he proceeded to use legal against me for another 6 years, continuing that trauma and abuse, which is very, very typical of a narcissist. And then I manifested and married husband number two, who also happened to be a narcissist. He was an overt, more malignant narcissist. So my experience with narcissism is personal and professional. As an attorney back 20 years ago, I actually worked in domestic violence. I was an expert in domestic violence, and I won the governor's award for my work in domestic violence. But also 20, 30 years ago in domestic violence, we focused on physical violence. We weren't really focused on psychological and emotional violence. So now what happens when you find yourself in a relationship that is not physically abusive, but there's something not quite right? And that's how it was for me. My background. Go ahead.
Sorry, can you, for the benefit of the audience, explain the different types of narcissistic behaviors and how they sort of manifested themselves? How did you experience that?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know over in, you know, other countries if you learn about Greek mythology, but we always, here in the US, we studied Greek mythology in middle school. And one of the people we learned about was Narcissus. And Narcissus was a man who fell in love with his own reflection. And in fact, he died by the reflecting pool, not even living his life. So in psychological terms, narcissism refers to an inflated self of self-importance, a lack of empathy for others, this deep need for excessive admiration and adoration, a sense of entitlement, just haughty, arrogant behavior. Narcissists have inflated egos, and they come across as being like very confident, very secure, very charming, and very charismatic. But yet that is all a front, because really a narcissist is someone who is a very wounded, unhealed person that through whatever went on in their life, instead of dealing and processing the traumas and stuff that they went through, they instead they disassociated and put on all these different protective layers of self. And that created a disordered personality. So narcissism is it's a mental disorder, and it is a disordered personality. And within that, there are it's like a spectrum disorder. And so within that, there are different types of narcissists, and they fall in different areas along this spectrum. So I am only familiar with my two ex-husbands and their disorder. My first ex-husband was a covert narcissist, and it is exactly how that sounds, right? Covert, hidden. These are the people who are pillars in the community. they come across as they're leaders in the community. They're involved in the community. They go to church. They may even lead groups in the church. They're the first to sign up to help the little old ladies get their house painted and go grocery shopping. But then they go home and they are a completely different person. They live this double life. And so that is more of the covert narcissist. The overt is exactly the opposite. They tend to be a little bit more aggressive. They are ones that are the self-proclaimed assholes and dicks. And again, I'm referring to men here, but it is also women.
Yes.
But my experience is only with men, mm-hmm. not with women. But there are women narcissists as well. So my second husband, self-proclaimed asshole, he hated everyone. He burned bridges. He's been kicked out of every doctor's office. Doctors refused to talk to him. He would be aggressive towards staff and get kicked out. He no longer could take kids to their dentist appointments or doctor's appointments. In the schools, the principals and the counselors refused to talk to him because he was such an asshole to everyone. But he also thought he was God's gift to everyone. Well, they're not respecting me. Like, respect is a big thing. And so the overarch of narcissistic abuse is power and control. It is all about power and control. How can they exert their power over you and control you? And so another way of looking at like what a narcissist is, because people always say, well, we all have some of those healthy narcissistic traits. Well, if you think of narcissism as a cake, there are multiple ingredients that go into making a cake, right? You need eggs, you need flour, you need sugar, baking soda, baking powder, you know, you have to have all of those ingredients together to make what we call a cake.
Yes.
And so that's narcissism. Now, when someone says, well, what about healthy narcissism? You know, we should have a good ego. We should be confident. We should do all those things. Is there such thing as healthy narcissism? Well, if you were to say healthy narcissism, then we would be taking some of those ingredients out of the cake, right? Okay, so let's take the eggs out. Let's take the baking soda out. Do you have a cake? No, you do not have a cake if you take some of those traits out, because you have to have all those traits to be a narcissist. The arrogance, the exploiting others to get what you want, the manipulation, the control, the respect, all of that. And so if you take some of those ingredients out, it is no longer a cake. It's like a Cliff Bar.
Right. So I don't think a lot of, especially the women that I've been in contact with and that I've had feedback from, and including some of those being clients, are tending to jump on the narcissistic bandwagon when really, you know, I'm thinking, actually, is that behavior just typical of a narcissist, or is it just, you know, a bad behavior that, yes, you know, that it could be classed as unacceptable, but it doesn't make him a narcissist.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, you really, you know, to be diagnosed, you have to have at least five of these traits. And like I said, we all have, yes, it's good to be confident. It's good to be secure. It's good to have a healthy ego. But the difference is we are not manipulating. We are not controlling. We are not exploiting. We are not, we have a healthy ego and a healthy confidence, whereas a narcissist, they portray that on the outside, but really they are some of the most fragile, sensitive, broken, hurt, lost people out there.
Do you think actually a narcissist could get to the stage in life where they recognize they have been that way and can heal from it?
So if you look at some of the leading people out there who work, like I love Lundy Bancroft. I don't know if you are familiar with who he is. He wrote the book Angry and Controlling Men, Why Do They Do That? He's been working with abusers for over 30 years, and he is the first to tell you out of thousands of men that he is and women that he has worked with that they do not change. Less than 2% will actually become aware and do the hard work. Because if you know, going back to the many layers of protective self, you have to become aware, and then you have to dig down into all those layers of self. That is hard work. And this is why when you are in a relationship with a narcissist, they can easily discard you and move on to the next relationship so quickly. And a week later, they're engaged and they're in love. It is because of these protective layers of self. If they had to stop and become aware, they wouldn't be able to move on so quickly. They would have to do some deep introspective reflection. And, when they do become aware and they do start to see that the what they've done, the harm they've caused, the families they've broken up, they can have a lot of guilt and shame. My second husband, I think this is a good example here, called me out of the blue 6 years later and was very apologetic and crying and I love you, I'm so sorry. And then he committed suicide. And so, it was like I can speculate, that's all I can do, but he had started therapy and most narcissists will not go to therapy. And I think, my speculation is that as he was diving into all these protective layers of self, he could not face what the damage that he had done, the guilt, the shame, all of that.
So do you think, those sorts of people are born with an actual, psychological or mental disorder in the first place? Or do you think, through nature or environment, that's impacted the way they viewed the world because they went through some sort of trauma through their childhood or something similar?
I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, but I think just from, being enmeshed in these relationships for so long, I think it's a little bit of both. I think there is, when we're born, we are programmed within our environment and the people around us, and then our some genetic programming as well. But then I feel like environment plays a bigger role later on in life. And so I don't know. I don't know for sure. I know my second husband had a very rough childhood. His parents, his dad was abusive towards his mom. There was a lot of domestic violence there. And then he went on and, there was just so many other things that led to who he is. My first husband, though, his father's actually a psychiatrist. His family is wonderful. His parents are still married. In fact, when he left me, he disowned his parents because his parents wouldn't give me up, if that makes sense. So I'm still very close to his parents. They are my second parents, but he disowned them. But as a young child, he was diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder. And oppositional defiant disorder is a childhood disorder that can turn into these cluster B personalities as an adult. And one of them is narcissism.
Do you think there is a case for, because I do think sometimes we have to be careful about giving children labels, such as that husband being given that
Absolutely.
label. And then, if you're given a label, quite often we'll live up to it, won't we?
I absolutely, I love that saying that we are the creators of our reality. And when someone labels you and tells you these things about you, then you do become them. Well, and I saw that with my first husband. You know, he got fired from every job he ever had. He had an issue with authority. He had an issue with people telling him what to do. He was the boss. He was in charge. And even he was a doctor. And I was like, oh, good. Now he's not going to be fired from jobs. No, he was still fired as a doctor because he just would not follow directions. He wanted to do his way was better than everyone else's way. He was, you know, whatever, the boss, and his ego was just so big yet so fragile. And yeah, that's all I know.
So do you think, I don't know what he's doing now, whether you follow or are engaged in terms of communication with him, but would he be somebody that would be better being his own boss, sitting on his own business, being entrepreneurial? So, you know, he could do everything for himself and not obviously be fired.
Well, you know, so he was the one who just committed suicide a couple of months ago. So
okay, sorry.
He is no longer with us. But, you know, as a doctor, they do have a lot of autonomy and they can do a lot of their own things. But yeah, I do think most narcissists would probably be better in their own business if that's even, yeah. If that's what they want to do. But, you know, the covert narcissist wants to look good in the community. They want to be respected. They want all that money, that wealth, that power.
And do you think his parents were aware of there not being something quite right, you know, when he was going through his childhood?
Probably. And I know that when he left me, so he was a cheater. And, you know, again, one of the traits of a narcissist is seeking that validation. They have this constant need for affirmation, for validation, for affection, for admiration and adoration. They want all your energy, all your attention. They want you to fawn all over them. Basically worship them is what they want.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I could not give my husband all of that because, you know, I had children and I have a life and I have other things, he went and sought that from other women. And for me, I didn't consider it abuse at that time because he wasn't physically violent and he was cheating. And how many of us do that? We put cheating over here and we put abuse over here. I did. But cheating is psychological and emotional abuse. I see that now.
But I suppose also to be clear from, you know, making it, easy for the listeners to understand, just because somebody cheats doesn't make them a narcissist, does it?
Absolutely. And, you know, something else to throw out there too, because this is another myth. Just because someone drinks and they are an alcoholic does not make them an abusive person or a narcissist as well. You have to separate the two behaviors. I know lots of many alcoholics who are wonderful, kind, gentle people. And then I know others who are very abusive. But the alcohol does not make someone abusive. Remember, it is power and control.
Just as I say, mindful that, you know, this word narcissist and narcissism is bandied around a lot and directed at people that are probably, you know, quite often done behaviors like cheating, when really that on its own doesn't make somebody a narcissist, does it?
No, they must have at least five of those cake ingredients that we were talking about earlier for them to be a narcissist. And again, it is power and control. They are, if someone is just cheating because they're just a cheater, it doesn't mean that they are controlling you.
Absolutely not. So how did you navigate your way through those relationships? You know, what did it have in terms of impact on you?
So, you know, it I think it would be more helpful to understand the cycle of narcissistic abuse, and then I can share my stories within that.
Excellent. Because, yeah, do that.
Yeah. So similar to domestic violence, there is a cycle of domestic violence. If narcissistic abuse, there's a cycle of narcissistic abuse. It first starts out with the idolization phase, and then it goes to the devaluation with intermittent love bombing, and then the discard. And so in the idealization phase, this is the beginning of the relationship. And who doesn't love the beginning of a relationship, right? It's fun. It's light. You're getting to know someone and you want that person to get to know you. Well, when you are beginning a relationship with a narcissist, it's not like they have a big old flashing sign on their forehead that says, I'm a narcissist. I'm going to treat you well, and then I'm going to stomp all over you. And so remember, these people are charismatic. They are charming. They are beautiful. They are wonderful in the beginning. They can charm a whole room and the room will light up. And they chose you. Doesn't that make you feel good and special knowing that someone who could get anybody in this room chooses you and gives you all their focus and all their attention? They want to know everything about you. They want to know the good, the bad, the ugly. They want to know what happened to you. How can I help you? How can I be this perfect partner for you? And they become that perfect partner for you. Because again, remember, this is a disordered personality with someone with multi layers of personality. So they put on another layer when you first get to know them, and they become the person you want them to become.
How long does that phase typically last? Does that vary between relationship to relationship?
It is. It is. It usually lasts until they have you hooked. And when I say hooked, committed to them. You're saying, I love you. Let's move in together. Let's buy a house together. Hey, let's get married. Let's just run off to Vegas and get married and start at making babies. You know, whatever it is. So it could be a couple of weeks. It could be a couple of months. It could be a year or two, however long. But the thing is that they can't pretend forever. Nobody can pretend forever. And soon that mask has to come off. But going back to the idolization phase, this is also, they open up and they talk and they really make it comfortable for you to get to know them. And the relationship progresses intensely and quickly. And so I tell people that's one of the first red flags, because it's very hard to find red flags when you're with a narcissist, because they literally are perfect for you. And so if it is too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. If it's moving and progressing very rapidly, slow it down. And you know, but they will lie and hide things. And so you don't really know who they are in the beginning. You just believe that you found your soulmate, you have found your person, because they'll say those words. And you have found the most wonderful person. Like my second ex-husband would say, we are soulmates. Where were you 20 years ago? You know, they will say words like that. And so you get really close and you open up. You tell them your insecurities. You tell them your weaknesses, the things that hurt you. He knew that my first husband cheated on me for so many years. And so they save all this information about you and they use it in the devaluation. So the next phase is the devaluation phase. This is when the mask comes off. And this is when all the manipulation, the gaslighting, and the control begins. Because remember, they cannot live a double life forever. And so gaslighting, what is that? That is a term that is thrown around a lot, similarly to narcissism being thrown around a lot. So gaslighting is when you manipulate another person into doubting their perceptions, experiences, or understanding of events. It is a form of emotional abuse. In fact, it is a highly calculated form of manipulation, and it involves destabilizing you over time. It's coercive control. And the narcissist will intentionally lie and deceive to confuse you, even when you have the evidence of the contrary. So, for instance, my first husband cheated for 14 years. I would tell him, you're cheating. Here's the proof. Here's the whole conversation you had with this woman. And he'd say, I didn't do that. You're reading into it. You're overthinking. You're overanalyzing. That's not what happened. Even when he went and had an affair with another woman, he still denied it. I'm not having an affair. They live in their own delusional world. Why do they gaslight? They gaslight because it is a way for the abuser to avoid any blame or any responsibility for their actions. If they can confuse you, if they can manipulate you into doubting what actually happened or minimizing it, then they shift the blame over to you and they are innocent. And so some common gaslighting phrases are, you are so sensitive. You can't take a joke. I'm just being sarcastic. You are way too sensitive. You just hate men. You can't handle me. You are the person with the problem. And my second husband's favorite, when he would look at his watch and say, oh yeah, I know why you're acting like a bitch right now. You're going to start your period tomorrow.
Ooh,
it's gaslighting. Yeah. Yes, that's gaslighting. And why? And, you know, over a long period of time, gaslighting is extremely harmful because they've created this fog. They insult you. They make fun of you. They criticize you. And now you start to self-doubt. You start thinking, am I the narcissist? Am I the one with bipolar personality? Because they will say stuff. You are crazy. You're making stuff up. There must be something wrong with you. And then we start making excuses for their behavior. And all of this erodes your self-respect and your ability to choose healthy situations for yourself. And all of this, with all the gaslighting and the manipulation and intermittent love bombing. And you know what I'm saying when I say love bombing? And so it creates a thing called cognitive dissonance. It is a fog. It is as if when the mask comes off, they put this fog bubble around you and your house and everything becomes confusing. You start to doubt what is real and what is not, what actually happened and what didn't happen. They twist your words. Arguments become this cyclical cycle that you don't even know what even happened. What are we even talking about? Because they go around and around and around, and soon they are crying and they are the victim. And you're just like, I don't even know what we're talking about. It's the cognitive dissonance, and they are experts in all of this. And it is intentional. Gaslighting is intentional because they intentionally lie and deceive to confuse you. And so this is psychological and emotional control. They start getting you to live from a place of reaction. They conditioned you. It's like they release a virus inside your mind that goes deep down into your subconscious mind, and you live from a place of reaction. And then when they feel like they've had enough, you've either turned into this empty shell or this robot, and you're not fun, you're not reacting the way they want you to, or you're overreacting, then they discard because it's a game and they move on to the next person. Or you find worthiness and courage and strength within yourself, and you say, I'm done. I'm done with this cycle. I'm done with this game. And you leave.
Wow. So interesting. So, Stephanie, for the benefit of the audience, if they want to find out more and want to reach out and connect with you, what's your best form of connection?
Yes. Yeah, so right now, LinkedIn is it's where I have all my stuff and it's where I spend the most time. And so you can reach out and find me there, and I will give you the links for that.
Excellent. Any final words of wisdom before we close the episode?
Yes. Why do people stay? We stay because, one, there's the trauma bond, and we didn't get to that. So we'll have to talk about that next time, the trauma bond. But two, we stay because we think we can change them. If I love them enough, if I change all these things about me, will they love me enough? And will I get that first person that I fell in love with in the idealization phase? Will I get that person back? No, because we cannot change anyone, and we are not responsible for changing anyone, and they will not change. The only thing you can do is focus on you, your growth, and your health.
100% agree with that. So thank you so much, Stephanie. It's been a fascinating conversation, and I trust we'll have many more around this topic and other topics in future episodes. So thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
So it just leaves me to say that true love starts with opening our hearts. And until next time, goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Hearts Entwined podcast. You can follow Lynn via the Facebook group Two Hearts Entwined, or search Lynn Smith, inspirational speaker, at LinkedIn, or email lynn@hearts-entwined.com. That's lyn@hearts-entwined.com. Remember, true love starts with opening our hearts.